More politics. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for A Shape Up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, author and professor of public policy at George Mason University Michael Fontroy, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy. No, Jimmy. Okay, well, I'll take it away, Jimmy. And whenever you come out from under the clippers, you can jump right in. The big news today, I think, in the political world, even though this is New York based, I think it has repercussions because for the politics of it and sort of the metaphor of it is New York Governor David Paterson. He's under fire. He's been criticized in the New York Times for a couple of days now about his relationship with a top aide. First, they questioned his qualifications, and then the question was, how did he respond to some very serious allegations of domestic abuse that his aide was accused of, and the governor's behavior in the course of that has come under fire because he has admitted that he called the complaining woman and it's not clear why he called her. So now David Paterson has made the decision that he will not be a candidate for re-election, only days after he said he would run for re-election. Now, Ken Rudin, you previously told us on this program you never thought he would be the nominee.
No, from the beginning, the stars were aligned against him. Remember when he first took office in March of 2008, one of the first things he announced was that he and his wife had separate affairs. I mean, his relationship with the state legislature was bad. The White House, the Barack Obama White House, said from the beginning that he should not run for a full term and without specifically endorsing somebody else. But that somebody else is Andrew Cuomo. He's a state attorney general, son of Mario Cuomo, the former 3-term governor, very, very popular, and unlike David Paterson, has a history of winning elections and doing very well in the polls.
Isn't this a little awkward, though, now that David Paterson had said just a day or so ago that he thought that Cuomo should investigate this allegations of whether he acted inappropriately in calling this woman who was the alleged victim of this domestic assault? So isn't that weird? He's going to be investigated by the guy who's trying to get his job?
It's like a scandal in the Obama White House, and I'm asking John Boehner to investigate for them, or asking Michael Steele to investigate an Obama investigation. It is very weird, but of course, as the top legal officer in New York, Andrew Cuomo is the guy. Now, I would suspect that, if anything, Andrew Cuomo would hand it off to a special or an independent prosecutor, because otherwise you don't want to come off as a political kind of investigation when obviously everybody would assume that's what it is.
So David Paterson's political career is over at this point.
It is, and it's kind of sad because, of course, you know, we know he's an accidental governor, Elliot Spitzer having resigned in March of 2008 because of a prostitution scandal, and so he was just put in as lieutenant governor. Usually we don't even know who the lieutenant governors are. Who remembers Malcolm Wilson or Marianne Krupp? These are former lieutenant governors of New York that nobody ever can remember. But the fact is, he was the first African-American governor of New York. Obviously, for a lot of people, want him to do well. His father was well-liked. Basil Paterson ran for lieutenant governor back in 1970. He's been involved in Harlem politics for decades. And yet, it just seemed like he was never cut out for this job.
And I want to mention that the governor was actually scheduled to speak with us today. And he confirmed that his office confirmed that he would be speaking with us as recently as yesterday morning. And then, of course, later in the afternoon, he canceled. So we certainly do hope at some point he'll come and speak with us. And he did give a press conference last night. I just want to play a short clip where he said that he was very clearly trying to figure out, you know, what to do. And I'll just play a short clip just so you can sort of hear how he sounded last night. Here it is. Mm-hmm.
I'm not suspending my campaign, but I am talking to a number of elected officials around the state, as I would fellow Democrats, to hear their opinions. I'm obviously listening to them. I've got an open mind about this thing. I want the Democrats to win in November. I want the governor of the state of New York to be Democratic, hopefully me. You know, I will weigh what they have to say, but right now I'm a candidate for governor.
So, Ruben, what do you make of all this? I mean, here you're
yeah.
You're kind of a tough on everybody person. What do you make of all this?
Today,
what do you think you should do?
I'm going to be tough on the New York Times. I think that in general, here's the thing. We got to look at this in the big picture. I don't believe for a minute that Governor Paterson sort of never intended to run. I think he did intend to run. I think he wanted the natural impulse for a politician who's the incumbent governor of New York is to run for re-election. And I think those plans were derailed ultimately by his own alleged stupid behavior. I mean, completely inappropriate behavior is alleged here. The fact that not just would the governor seem to be applying pressure to this woman, this victim of domestic violence, but having state police State police officers with badges and guns visit the woman to apply a different kind of pressure as well. That is just completely beyond the pale. That is completely unacceptable. That's what cooked his goose in the long run, if all this is true. But having said that, I said from the beginning, there are folks in New York who always wanted Andrew Cuomo to be governor, never wanted Patterson there. They saw him as an illegitimate heir who was only there because of what happened to Elliot Spitzer. And the New York Times and others have been leading this crusade to get him out. And we need to be able to say that. If this were Fox News, we'd have no trouble saying it. The fact that the New York Times is the pillar of the liberal media establishment, to my mind, doesn't insulate it from criticism for its almost vindictive pursuit of Governor Patterson.
Michael Fontrey, what do you think of this? What do you make of that?
Well, it's equally sad, but it's also politically pathetic. I mean, it turns out that Governor Patterson is no longer politically viable, and given what's going on with the state police, no longer ethically viable as governor. You know, a lot of us lost our minds during the 2000 campaign when it turned out that Sarah Palin had been accused of having some inappropriate contact with state police regarding her sister in a divorce case. So, you know, it just seems to me that what we have here is someone who sort of fell into the job, was never really well suited for, and all of this sort of fountain of incompetence has sort of sprayed out all over the state, and now there's a big mess. And unfortunately, I'm not certain Andrew Cuomo could save it.
Rich, what do you make of his comments earlier on the CNN program, Larry King, and before he was starting his pushback, or his, before the pieces were even published, where he said, well, this is an effort to racialize me and sexualize me. And he really did put it in kind of a racial context, that he was being attacked in part not just because he's the governor, the highest ranking, or a Democrat, but because he's an African-American. I mean, he's the first African-American governor of the state of New York.
Well, Michelle, that there may well be something to that, but the reality is that does not sort of overcome all of this other stuff that's going on.
Right.
And for
right.
that reason, you know, it sort of rings hollow, though it may well be true.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop. We're speaking with Michael Fontrey, Ken Rudin, Ruben Navarrete, and hopefully Jimmy's back with us. Jimmy, are you there?
I'm here.
There you are. I don't know where you've been. So busy getting your shape up. You didn't have time for us. So Jimmy, I wanted to ask you about, and try to contain yourself, one of your favorite people, the Reverend Al Sharpton,
right,
and one of your other favorite people, Tavis Smiley, the talk show host, who got
right.
into this heated debate over, you know, and the reason I think one of the reasons we're interested in this is that the question for David Patterson is he's the first black governor, he's the governor of New York, a very important state, a political important figure in his own right, but he's also an African-American governor. And is there some sort of broader swirl around that? And it leads to this debate that they had over whether President Obama has a specific responsibility to address the specific concerns of African-Americans. Jimmy, you want to talk more about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I for me, that's kind of troubling, you know. And this, you know what, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble because everybody knows I'm down on the Reverend Al sometime. But I think this may be one of the Ruben hold still. I think this may be one of the cases where Al Sharpton is dangerous when he's on message, and he's on message. You know, Tavis,
I fell off my chair. Oh,
Tavis, this looks like his ego has gotten the best of him. He wants to be king of all blacks desperately. You know, and in my opinion, I think he's trying to by suggesting that other black leaders set the agenda. He's trying to be the vanguard of that, and I think that's a problem.
We need to take a short break because I'm going to play a little bit of this after we take our break, just so that everybody who hasn't followed this knows what we're talking about. But before we do, Michael Fontrey, I wanted to ask your assessment of this. Is this kind of just egoism at its finest, or is this a kind of political maturity that people, prominent African Americans, can feel free to disagree publicly?
Well, it's unfortunate. You know, Tavis is a friend of mine, and I've said to others that I think in this case he may have used an Uzi when a pistol may have been a more appropriate weapon, because he sort of sprayed a whole bunch of people that I don't think he necessarily needed to. I think they're legitimate questions with regard to Sharpton. I'm fine with people debating things publicly. I'm not fine with some of the sort of personalizing of it that I think is beginning to happen. And unfortunately, it looks like this is the start of something new.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll have more on this with public policy professor Michael Fontrey, journalist Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, and Ken Rudin. We'll tell you a little bit more about what we're talking about. We'll actually play some of the exchange so you can decide for yourself whether you think this matters or not. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Please stay with us. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Olympic speed skater Shani Davis is the first African-American to win an individual medal at Winter Olympic Games. We'll talk about sport and race in a few minutes. But first, we want to continue our conversation with our barbershop guys. We're visiting with public policy professor Michael Fauntroy, journalist Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Ken Rudin. And Jimmy, before we go to you, I wanted to play that clip that I'd mentioned before the break. We'd been talking about this beef between Reverend Al Sharpton and the talk show host Tavis Smiley. And they got into a conversation about whether President Obama has a responsibility to set a national agenda specifically for African Americans. And I just want to play a short clip. What happened first is that Tavis called into the Tom Joyner show and said, which is, of course, a popular nationally syndicated program, and said that—
with a commentary.
With a commentary, but he says he's convening, right. He's convening a gathering of black thought leaders to talk about this. And he criticized Al Sharpton for having a meeting with the president where he says they didn't specifically press hard enough. And here's that clip.
Mm-hmm. Is that Tavis Smiley?
Reverend Al, how are you, sir?
I was fine till you stopped messing with me this morning. What's wrong with you?
Nothing's wrong with me, and I'm not messing with you or Brother Ogletree. What I said this morning was whether or not there needs to be a black agenda. And when there are certain African-American leaders, including respectfully and lovingly, as I said this morning, the two on this phone right now, who are quoted in the New York Times and other places coming out of meetings in the White House suggesting we don't need to have this president focus on an African-American agenda, given that black folk are getting crushed, I think there's a disconnect between those kinds of quotes and black people.
And then later on, this debate carried on in another program, and here's Reverend Al's response a little bit later. Here it is.
Saying the president shouldn't value a black agenda is not saying the president should not be held to a black agenda or deal with a black agenda. And that is not what you said. Don't talk to us like we stupid, Tavis. Hold on a minute. We're going to take a break, and then I'm going to let you say whatever you want to say. But if you want to deal with truth, let's deal with truth lovingly. But don't love me and distort me. Keeping it real. Sharpton, that's my name. I'll be right back.
So he did let him respond. I just want to know, he didn't just like use the mic and cut him off, but he did let him respond. Go ahead, Ruben.
I got to get in. Listen, I've known Tavis for 17 years. Obviously, he and I once hosted a radio show together in Los Angeles when we were kids. And I'll tell you what, and there have been times where I've disagreed with him, times where I've done so in public and in print. In this case, It is just wrong, I think, to make this about Tavis's ego. First of all, if you listen to that clip and you know anything about Reverend Al, this is not one humble brother we're talking about with Al Sharpton. He's got his own ego to deal with. You know, Al Sharpton looks in the mirror
and
he sees Denzel Washington looking back. It's the way it is. So there is a lot there with egos on all parties and all of the players in this drama. But there is a big question here. And what really set Tavis off was a story in early February in the New York Times that talked about Obama's nuanced approach to race. And in it, they made reference to Al Sharpton, Ogletree, Charles Ogletree at Harvard and others, basically giving the president a pass and saying that they wouldn't hold him to the same sort of standard they might hold a white president to. And Tavis brings up a very important point. He says, how can we give President Obama a pass and then one, down the line when we have another white president, as I think we're all sure we will at some point, then come back and resurrect the moral authority to press him on our issues? This is a really important debate. Tavis's point is very well taken. I think a lot of the criticism you hear from Reverend Al was based on jealousy and envy, where I think Sharpton gave that away was when he talked about people who go out and sell books. I mean, Tavis Smiley has a bigger microphone than Al Sharpton, and it bugs the hell out of him.
Okay. All right, Jimmy, what about you?
Well, There's a couple.
Because I'm not sure if it's about ego or it's about tactics. Is it really about that they disagree on the substance, or do they just agree tactically about what is the best approach here? But Jimmy, what do you think?
I think it's tactics. I do. I think that Reverend Al Sharpton, what he's saying to Tavis is, look, you know, this is the president of America, not the president of Black America. Let him get in and do his thing. And what's good for America is good for Black people too, right? Right, Ruben?
Well, no. Let me say no, because we
no. Okay, all right.
I'm going to say no, because typically I'd say the same thing about Latinos. We've typically have talked about things like Latino education and Black mm-hmm. home ownership. When we have a white president, we don't have a problem setting out a Black agenda, you know, and saying that if you fix the educational system in this country, a high tide lifts all boats, to use a Tavis Smiley phrase, and all of a sudden Black folks are going to come along for the ride. That has not been good enough when we've had a white president. The thing that Black people are struggling with is the paradox of having a Black president who does not advocate specifically for Black folks, and they don't know how to deal with it.
And Michael, what do you think?
I was just going to say.
You wrote about this, actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I actually think that this is part of the real problem here. We are ignoring the larger question that Tavis is raising, and that is whether or not the president should pay attention to Black issues. I think the answer to that question is yes, because special problems require special solutions. In Milwaukee in 2008 and 2009, the Black male unemployment rate was about 50%. In Washington, D.C. in late 2009, Black males between 16 and 24 were unemployed at about 35%. You know, that's way beyond the 10% that everybody's jumping up and down about right now, and it won't be reduced by simply focusing on everybody. And so I just think that Sharpton and those who take that position need to know that a rising tide is not going to lift every boat the way they think.
I'm going to go to Ken on this, but I just want to point out that Reverend Sharpton actually just called us to tell us to give his perspective. We just don't have the ability to kind of just put him
he's
into
everywhere.
Our conversation. He called to say that the president invited that
right
his
on.
The meeting that he had with the president. He was invited not as Al Sharpton individual, but as a representative of a group, as were the other people that Mark Morial was invited, the president of the Urban League. He's invited the National Council of Negro Women leader, Dorothy Height, was invited. She wasn't able to come because of the weather. And he, his group, and he, the president, asked each group about their agenda. He says, and so Reverend Al says, what is that if not a Black agenda? And he just said, for the record, he does think this is about ego. I don't know. Ken, what do you think?
Well,
small ego for Kenny Rudin.
Well, first of all, yeah. I thought that I thought Rubin's argument was excellent. I think he articulated better than I ever heard it. I think ego, yes, is involved here. And sure, it's easy to say that, well, President Obama is the president of everybody and his policies will raise up everybody, including African Americans. I could see the argument clearly, though, that some kind of a signal, at least maybe a kind of a policy or a major aid, somebody should say that, look, we know what we're doing and this is exactly where we're focusing. But I could see at the same time where Obama's, you know, the argument that Obama should direct his appeal towards African Americans would probably, you know, alienate half the administration.
Well, that's the question.
Yeah,
that's the
like
question. I think, Ken,
Rudin,
that's a legitimate.
Right.
Go ahead, Jimmy. I think you're going to make the same point that the argument
yeah,
here is it's tactically, it's more difficult for an African American president to appear to be highlighting the concerns of African Americans. And so it just makes more sense. Politically, that's, I think, the argument.
But
that
it could
Reverend
be
Al
Nixon going to China. If Nixon could go to China, perhaps Obama could do that kind of outreach.
Is China African Americans?
It was back in the 70s.
So, well, Jimmy, go ahead.
Good to know.
Yeah, it is good to know. Jimmy, before I let you go, since you're our culture vulture here, the NAACP Image Awards is tonight. And some people have raised the question over some of the year's nominees. The Image Awards is giving an honor to Van Jones for he was fired, famously, or pushed out by the Obama administration because of some intemperate bad judgment in signing a petition that got the attention of the conservative punditocracy. And then there's this Michael Jackson Memorial Service, which is then being up for an award for outstanding variety. It's Michael Jackson's funeral. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Tacky.
Really?
Well, why are we giving out awards for funerals now? What's up with that? You know, next thing, you know, we're going to have somebody trying to outdo him. You know, trying to outdo Michael. You know, that's It's ugly.
It's not a good look, as you would say. All right. I'm sorry. We have to let it go for now. Thanks, everybody. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist for TheRoot.com and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Michael Fontroy is a professor of public policy at George Mason University and the author of Republicans and the Black Vote. He was here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio along with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, our political junkie. I thank everybody so much for joining us.